I'm Jane Sutton.
Great. And where do you teach now?
I teach at Penn State York.
Okay, York, okay. And I'm Heather Palmer, I'm University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. So when did you first join RSA?
I joined RSA in 1986.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure what year the organization started, but
right.
I think that would be pretty close to the beginning of the organization.
Right.
When the meetings met in Arlington, Texas.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember, are there like any like singular moments you remember about that first conference you maybe went to?
In 86?
Yeah.
It was extremely vibrant. It was, the energy was just palpable.
Mm-hmm.
It was a group of people that were coming together. People like Victor Ventanza, John Palakos. I'm trying to think of all the people that were there.
Yeah.
Dalit Ganakar was there. We were all really engaged in talking about the history of rhetoric. It was this group of English and speech, at the time,
okay.
They were called speech communication faculty, of which I'm a part.
Yeah.
And
so you're coming from the speech communication side?
Yes.
And then,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was just exciting because rhetoric seemed to be on the rise. It was like a phoenix bird, if you
yeah.
will, and it was coming up, and the panels were just amazing. We just talked constantly and into the night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So were you a graduate? So you were a graduate student in 86?
No,
or
I
what?
Had, in 86,
okay.
I had just, that was my second year. I graduated at my doctorate at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and I began working at Penn State York in 84. In 1986, I published this article called The Death of Rhetoric and Its Rebirth in Philosophy.
Oh my gosh,
in Rhetorica.
Yeah, okay, yes.
And that is what, that's how Victor Ventanza found me, or I found Victor Ventanza. He had published something, I think, in Rhetoric Review with the claw, with the claw on it.
That sounds
and
about
we,
right.
yes, and so that just started this whole synergetic conversation that began this movement. It was our interest in sophists, our interest in this whole idea of really delving into a rebirth of rhetoric and what that would mean.
For me, 10 years later, like in graduate school,
like
hitting upon Vuitton's work, and I mean, even, yeah, it was.
So what do you
I could feel the waves of that synergy in 96. You know, I mean, just reapproaching
like
sort of the epistemologies of the sophists and just how revolutionary it still seemed to be. Then. So I can only imagine like being there, like sort of ground zero.
Yeah, it really was ground zero.
Yeah.
People were now Barbara Kasson has kind of phrased this now. Who's afraid of the sophists? I think she's in France, a French philosopher. However, I mean, that was our question in 1986 at this conference. And we were delving into sophistic fragments.
Yeah.
And we as John Palakos said, if you start reading Aristotle, you're starting in the middle of the history of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to push back and start to really explore what comes before and how does it problematize the rhetoric or how does it complement the rhetoric? We were really interested in developing theory.
Right, that's what I'm, yes.
We were interested in developing theory. How does theory grow? How does it emerge? Current problems of the time and the day. How do you reinvigorate or reinvent rhetoric so that... in many ways, we saw ourselves as contemporary sophists, if you will, what Victor eventually coined as a third sophistic.
Yeah.
We were going to rebuild rhetoric in terms of a theoretical point of view. And the rebuilding meant, how will you include women that had been left out of the history of rhetoric? How do you include the sophists who had been talked about as inessential and irrelevant? You know, how do you incorporate them? Because things that they had to say wasn't all that, there were some really important things in there. Right. Those were some of the bigger questions.
Right, right. And then, of course, this whole question of, you know, your methodologies and, like, legitimizing these lines of inquiry, which people can, you know, continue to write about, these methodologies, what is it? Yeah. Even a sophisticated methodology, network on some non-representational methodologies.
Yeah.
Just the work that y'all started, we're the inheritors of, and it's still so fertile and still going.
Yeah.
But I hadn't put a date on it until you said that, like,
yeah,
mid-'80s. Just a question, like, okay, of course, we're, you know, enmeshed and in this, it emerges out of the culture in which it's placed. So, like, what do you think it was about the 80s, either in academia or just the culture? Why the United States? Why not Europe? You know, I always wonder that.
Why did it happen in the United States, this emergence in the sophistic culture? Well, I think there was this kind of simultaneity where you have in the, you have, like, in France, you have this whole postmodern movement. And what they're doing is that they're also looking at the sophists.
Right.
So if you know, Heidegger is also, you know, and he talks about the sophists and being in time.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a lot of Derrida's work, and Derrida's extreme. I mean, he's a classicist through and through. He's looking at that. The other really interesting thing that's going on is that the Germans are also really interested. German classicists like Clausen are writing about the sophists.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I'll just be saying
straight up. That's classical. They were hardcore classicists.
You know,
and classicists are really gone from universities now. I mean, for example, at Penn State, it kind of merged with Mediterranean studies. It dissolved. The classics departments in 1986 were very, very private. So, I mean, this is where Kennedy comes from as well.
Still using his work.
Yeah. So you have classicists, both in the United States and in Germany.
Okay.
You have the postmodern movement that's coming along in France, especially and the rise of feminism that's going along with it.
In the mid-'80s, still.
I mean, that we're reading now.
Okay.
We're reading
a little behind this.
Because the professors that I had hadn't really read them. And that was one of the challenges when you would go to NCA that wasn't what they studied in graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't, it was strange. What are they saying?
I remember that in the early 90s even, they'd be like, that's that newfangled postmodernism. I'm like, it's only like 25 years old.
Yeah.
Still fighting against that in the early
90s. Yeah. But it was vicious in many ways.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of that kind of a fight. There was a beginning to be a real split, you know, in terms of, because rhetoric had been so saturated in public address and Aristotle.
Mm-hmm.
And now you are moving towards these philosophers who seem more interested in rhetoric than rhetoricians themselves.
Right.
Seriously. Okay. And then you've got also, and Vintanz is really looking at Nietzsche. And Nietzsche is like rhetorical through and through.
Oh my gosh, his lecture notes. Are on rhetoric.
Right, and eventually those were translated.
Yeah.
Right. I actually paid some money with John and I and some other people to have some of his lecture notes.
I was fortunate to have them in graduate school, but I remember pouring over them like they were.
Yeah. Now I think that group is like published. I think Carol Blair like published. But that is that was just so amazing, because he's talking about truth as a mobile army of metaphors.
One of my chills. Just one of my favorite words still.
I mean, he's talking about it that way, and this is not the truth of an Aristotle tradition and notions of public address. It's really coming out of a Cold War mentality. I mean, that's how I see it now.
Okay,
in
interesting.
Respect.
Yeah,
because the 1980s are not that far from us leaving Vietnam,
right?
The whole notion of communism.
Right. And it's interesting.
So,
like,
we left Vietnam in 79,
like,
right?
The organization
it's 1979,
so first, right?
It's the Reagan administration. Like, now there is
that collectivity.
Is,
that
things they're talking about Star Wars in the 1980s and building this kind of military.
That was so good.
What is it
Thank
called?
You
a
so
shield?
Much,
yeah.
I mean, but there's this Cold War,
nice
this
to
war,
to you.
Examining
I really
all of that.
It. And these are going
and
to
over here,
your question,
we're looking at rhetoric.
Roxanne Mocker was interested
what is
in this
thing,
project,
and how does it? What is this? What is
theory?
How would you develop it? And
so it demanded a sophistic epistemology, perhaps.
And what would this new development mean for rethinking the condition
all
of
right,
democracy.
So
yes, okay.
And we're, because we have this condition here.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
have a good
what
one.
Can we do? How can we reinvent, reimagine
the
relationship between rhetoric and democracy?
Okay.
This
so
is,
this wasn't just play pretty, let's get together and bat around some epistemologies. This was like we're doing some serious.
We're doing some serious
thinking
here.
Working through, yeah.
Yes, because rhetoric has this whole history. I mean, Bart had written about, you know, the death of rhetoric that repeatedly dies.
Right.
It died, you know, in the Romans. It died, you know, how it comes back. This was an opportunity, you know, to bringing it back. And why would you bring it back?
Right.
Right. What would it, why spend all this human capital and resources and looking at that?
Yeah.
And going into something, going into the sophist that had already been rejected by the tradition.
Right.
When you look up in that dictionary, what does sophist mean? It's irrational thought.
Right.
So you, why would you be heading towards irrationality is how it was viewed. And this postmodern was garbly goop anyway. So you blend those two together.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So then RSA, just tap back to these questions. Mm-hmm. So RSA like gave you a space and a place and a society and a collective to...
Yes, and so it was consistently held at Arlington. I can't remember the last year it was held at Arlington, but it was a long time. Charles Kneiper.
Okay.
You know. And then they started creating the journal, which was Staple. I wanted to bring them. I have the first copy of the Staple.
Oh my gosh, that was so cool.
RSA.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bunch of 8x10 sheets that you stapled together.
Because in the 80s, I was in the punk rock scene. We had little fanzines that we would staple together. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. This was the journal.
This was
this
the journal.
Like the emergence of RSQ.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean, now it's Taylor and Francis and
right.
what it looks like. But that was the little copy that you would get in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
that's kind of like underground. Like
it was underground.
That's what I'm. Subcultural underground,
so
kind of like
underground. Mm-hmm. That you were really that the work you were doing really, really mattered.
Yeah,
and it was there was no real institutional mechanism to really produce your own work.
Right,
produce this work. So we're just going to have to staple it together.
It's that whole DIY thing, you know, do it yourself, kind of.
Uh-huh.
From the grassroots collectivization.
Yeah.
That is really neat. Well, then, so now, I mean, one of the questions is the key people you remember meeting or working with during your early years. I think you've addressed some of that, unless there's some people you didn't get to talk about.
Yeah, so Victor,
yeah.
John Takas,
mm-hmm.
Janet Atwell was there.
Yeah.
There was Dalip Ganakar.
Now, see, I don't know that name.
Uh-huh. He was John's Palapa student. He was involved early on. Kathleen Welch, Richard Enos. Trying to think.
Right.
We could fill up. We became about 12, 15 people early on, and it continued to expand. Susan Jarrett.
I was about to say
we're
Susan in her. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
Takas was her student.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a lot. There were this student, faculty, and student are like coming together.
Yeah.
Like Victor, Michelle Bailiff, Diane Davis was a student of Victor.
Was she around in the 80s or Diane? Or?
Michelle, I think, was a master's degree student at the time, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yes, they were like there early in the 80s.
Yeah.
Michelle was as a master's student.
So
there was that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And I entered it through that article I had published in Rhetorica, The Death of Rhetoric and Its Rebirth in Philosophy. And Victor had found that and cited it in his work with chicken claw in it on historiography. There's a ladder that's climbing up. on revising the history of rhetoric that he published in Pretext.
Right.
The journal that he started.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a ladder, and the guy's going up, and he's, like, putting a mustache or something on Aristotle.
Okay, I'm going to have to go back and find that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just, you know, dabbled around Pretext, and, of course, mm-hmm. Negation and the History of Rhetoric. I mean, I've read that back and forth, but I don't mm-hmm. know the Claw essay. But, yeah.
Well, yes, it was Rhetoric Review
yeah,
that
okay.
had a pen.
Yeah.
And then he, with his Pretext, he started a chicken claw that...
Image. And so, wait, so he cites you in that. Does he contact you directly?
Yes, we started contact. That's what drew me then to the Rhetoric Society of America. Mm-hmm. That was, and then I called John.
Yeah.
Said, look, John had published his article in Philosophy and Rhetoric on the definition of sophistic rhetoric.
Okay.
And I said, oh, here's somebody. We gotta meet.
Gotta make these mm-hmm. these connections and
yeah.
the synergy. Okay.
Because I always had this idea, I always had this dream that one day there would be a sophistical institute, but there never was. But I always thought that
what
was my.
Or is this it?
Yeah, I always thought one day.
Yeah.
There'll be a sophistical institute, and that. So I started mapping these connections.
Mm-hmm.
And John, you have got to meet Victor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you go to RSA.
Putting it together from the ground up. Yeah. What was RSA when you first joined? Its major projects and goals. I mean, I think you've been outlining that. Okay, change over time.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen it change? Maybe different phases you want to mark out? You started with the 80s.
Yeah.
We're sitting here now. Mm-hmm. It's the 50th year. You know.
Yeah, so it was always held in Arlington, and then I don't know what year it was when it started this travel, this biennial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a massive society now. It was a small group, and now it's really, really grown. I see it now as a home for other organizations like the National Communication Association,
mm-hmm.
or MLA, that are so scattered and so big now. I mean, they're so massive that this is a place kind of recreates what happened in the 80s. These are a place where people can come and do rhetoric,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
from all of these various disciplines. What's missing now
mm-hmm.
that was in the 80s is we don't have the classicist influence or the there used to be a lot more other disciplines that
okay.
were even anthropologists.
Sure.
There was, in the 80s, there was this real grouping, you know, especially in that contribution of classics. So
I was asking Richard about that. Tell me about the relationship mm-hmm. with, you know, between the classicists and the rhetorics, because he's kind of in both, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, I remember sometimes seeing it be a little contentious at some conferences, specifically at, like, classicist conferences.
Yeah.
And then I will go through the program and look for, like, the classicist panels, and you're right,
yeah.
like, where is their presence? Or
yeah, their presence is missing. But
yeah.
also classics is diminished, which is...
Right. Yeah, those departments are under,
mm-hmm.
under threat.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are big disruptive events, though, in rhetoric, and one
okay.
of them was the debate between Palacas and Schiappa.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think you can whitewash that. I mean, it
yeah.
was where, what is, I mean, the publication of, did rhetoric exist if the word didn't exist?
Right, right.
Right? I mean, basically that's...
The core of that.
And that, but around those edges,
mm-hmm.
besides personality, around those edges were real questions of methodology.
Yes.
And so... how and domains of knowledge.
Yeah.
How do you produce knowledge? And so
yeah.
that and different disciplines come at things a different way. So this is part of that split with classicists,
mm-hmm.
right? Because of their demands for how you would know something.
Mm-hmm.
But those were different. They were different questions.
Okay.
That was always underwriting it.
Yeah,
you know that clash.
Yeah. But that makes me think it's interesting because,
mm-hmm.
I teach history of rhetoric at whatever level. It's, I mean, yes, you're right. There's disruptions in
mm-hmm.
this narrative, of course, because it's not continuous, you know, as a field. But I will teach the debates as part of, right? Them understanding.
Yeah.
You know, of course, history of rhetoric, whatever that is. See, I like that you brought that up. Speaking to RSA's history itself.
It's, you know, well, it's embedded in the history, but
yeah.
What I did, which really rocked a nut. John had written a paper on this question of does rhetoric exist? He missed the conference. He asked me to read the paper. I read the paper. To this day, I don't know if John set me up or not. However, I mean, his argument was that he used the TLJ, the Thesaurus Lingua Graeca. He had used that to search, and he could not find the word piss anywhere in the thesaurus. Therefore, he wondered if the Greeks ever pissed before the word.
Right.
This was the whole paper. I mean, the audience was there to listen to this debate. Okay. And this is where, eventually, this is where the debate goes.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's really, and
so in your memories, so this is a singular memory, let's flesh it out a bit if you don't mind. So you're reading this paper at his behest.
Yes. And I don't know if John set me up.
Right.
Because I honestly, I mean, he doesn't show up at the last minute.
Yeah.
They're saying John's plane was delayed or he was sick. I don't remember the circumstances.
Yeah,
remember they handed me the paper. I had not read the paper.
That's what I was going to ask. Had you read the paper?
I had not read the paper.
So it's a discovery for you as well as you're reading?
Right. I mean, I saw the opening paragraph.
Sure.
And I, sure, I'll read that.
Yeah.
But then as the argument developed, and he lays it out, and he mimics and imitates the whole methodology that is used, that was used to show that rhetoric didn't exist,
rhetoric.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's a game of mimicry.
Yeah.
Right. He's mimicking, and it's also deeply ironic and meant to really open up that conversation, but it throws on the brakes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was the reaction?
People got mad. They said, well, that's ridiculous.
Then how do you feel that? Because you're not the, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it became then a matter of, and what happened is, if you'll look into the literature, you'll see that debate stops.
Mm-hmm.
It stopped the debate.
Okay.
And then people either took a side or said, oh, I'm going to go along this vein, or I'm going to go along this vein.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. Okay, so then questions about futurity. So how do you think the organization will change in the years to come, and maybe what kind of work would you like to see it do? I mean, I guess within academia, within the culture sort of at large, like,
yeah. That's really hard to say. I mean, you can see that it's becoming more and more like an NCA or an MLA.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, this convention, it's growing. I really push on the integration of disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
It's opening up space for that.
Okay.
Do
you have any fears about, like, as it becomes large? I mean, we see what happened with MLA, right? But
they're
trying to fix that, right? But what? I mean, I don't want to approach it from a negative angle. We want to talk about hopes, but like some things to avoid, or some fears.
I don't know if that's just a nostalgia. I don't know if it's my age, but I do miss those big conversations about rhetoric.
Right.
So this panel for a panel format, what was different about the 1980s is that we could all be in the same room.
Right.
We can't all be in the same
room. The core group, you mean, can all be in the same
room. Yeah, a lot of people that came. I mean, it was really, really small.
Now, you meant all the people at the conference.
All the people at the conference.
Oh, my gosh, that's a whole different.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine that. Yeah.
We could all be in the same room at some point.
Yeah.
And, you know, continue talking.
Yeah.
There was a, you know, more of a, there was a sense of, there was an intimacy and an urgency.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think we're getting some of that urgency just because of the political climate, or that's here, I think, at least in some groups. What about like factionalization? I mean, do we have that? I don't think we have that, do we? like these different kind of warring factions. I don't ever feel that at RSA.
No, I don't feel
you know, like at MLA sometimes you'll get that, or you know, some other conferences, but there still seems to be some sort of like preservation of camaraderie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't sense those factions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about hopes for the future? I mean, so we just looked at the, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, the, you know, the keywords that they chose, mm-hmm. Which are history, historiography is not one of them, which is fine, you know, but it's like Kairos, the body, energy, is that one, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't, yeah, I would like to read about that. I thought that was an interesting, the idea of using those keywords. If you'll notice that none of those words are really, I mean, you don't expect rhetoric to be a key word because that's what you're doing it, but there's, I mean, in the 1986, a key word might be sophist, or a key word might be, so are the keywords really a reflection of how the discipline is changing?
That's why I was wondering myself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to go back and reread it really with an eye to that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like what was left out, I'd like to read what was left, you know, from a metadisciplinary level, read what was left out, but yeah.
And if you do have a keyword like body, is it incorporating all of the, is it incorporating things like a trope? Is it incorporating, what is, you know, what does it house, so to speak?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we're pretty much out of time. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the organization's future or your hopes for it, to say, you graduate students, or you know, so somebody was attending this for the first time and it was a graduate student who felt a little overwhelmed, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I always encourage people to attend this conference, and as opposed to a conference like an NCA or an MLA, that they can really get their feet grounded and connected in a place like this.
Right.
That's what I always encourage.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.